Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Preds radio analyst Hal Gill joining us at 9:30. So looking forward to that conversation with him. We'll look ahead to the Predators taking on the Dallas Stars tonight at Bridgestone Arena, going for win number 7 in a row. So we'll see if the Predators are able to pull that off. Joe, let's quickly go to our text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Shane from Ashland City texts in and says, Matt Benning will be scoring tonight. Now, you talk about a called shot. That'd be a heck of a call right there. Yep. If Benning ends up on the board.
Remember Shane's name. Those of you with younger brains than mine, Shane, we've got to give you a shout-out if Matt Benning scores tonight.
That's right. Brian on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, Yarncroak will score again. So Brian voicing his support for Joe Rexroad in this competition. Don't really appreciate that, but I guess I'll let it slide.
Yarncroak's year.
It is. It is pretty amazing, like him specifically, because he's been a guy that I think a lot of Predators fans have taken for granted in terms of what they ask him to do. And I've even been guilty of that as well. Like, I've watched Yarncroak play ever since he came here with the Predators. I mean, he's been here since, you know, the end of the 14 season. So he played 12 games with the Predators, came over in a trade that year from the Red Wings with David Legwand. And, you know, ever since then has been a serviceable player. They've played him in literally every position. They've played him up and down the lineup, whether it's been on the wing or at center, fourth line, first line, second. It doesn't matter. They've played him everywhere. And he's typically been, you know, right around a 30-point guy in the regular season, 15 goals, 16 goals, somewhere in that category. And right now, through 31 games, he's got 11. Now, albeit his shooting percentage is really high right now. It's around 20%. So that is an extremely high number in the NHL, and you would think in a normal year that comes back down at some point. But right now, I mean, he is on pace to just blow away his career. I mean, he's on pace to get about 30 goals, and that would be impressive for Cali Yarncroak. So he continues to play really well on a consistent basis. And, you know, we heard Matt Duchene describe it a little bit yesterday. Like, he's a guy that just scores, and he doesn't have the most talent in the world, and he's not a guy that's going to blow you away with his puck handling skills or anything like that. But he finds ways to get open, finds the right places to be on the ice. And right now, it's working out really well for him, working out really well for you in our Preds Pick to Click competition as well.
What would James Neal have for this team right now?
Not much. Not much. Let's look.
A lot of people mad.
James Neal's got 3 goals in 17 games this year with the Oilers.
A lot of people mad about that move. It is, honestly, you do forget, like, 16, 15, 16, and then a 15. I mean, he's had, so 4 seasons of 15 goals or more. Again, I mean, I asked a question a couple weeks ago. If he had been, if he had a devoted spot, you know, in the top 6 during that time, how different would those numbers be?
Maybe.
Maybe they wouldn't be that different, but I mean, there's times when it's like, hey, Kelly, go center the fourth line. Hey, okay, yeah. Now you're over here in with this line, and you're in this wing. I mean, it's a great thing to have, and at his price, it's a really great thing to have, but maybe he's been hosed a little bit.
Well, maybe so. I mean, look, I don't think the Cali Yarncroak is what we're seeing right now. Like I said, the shooting percentage is very high, and that's not taking anything away from him. I think he's worked to get to the areas where you can have a good shooting percentage. That's been a part of the story this year with him for sure. But, I mean, we see things like this happen where players will be on streaks where it seems like every other shot's going in the net. And that's a great place to be if you're the player. I think if you're the management side of this or a fan, you also have to keep in mind that eventually those percentages are probably going to come down. So if he was in a full-time top 6 role, could he be a consistent 20-goal guy every year? And I think it's a legitimate question. Like, could Cali Yarncroak be what Craig Smith was for this team? I think that's an interesting question. I don't know. I mean, we've never gotten to
different
see him
kind
do
of
that.
Player.
Different kinds of players. And I think that's part of what's worked against Yarncroak is because he can do so many different things well that they ask him to do so many different things. And a lot of times that has involved playing on the fourth line and being the center, or playing
being on the penalty
on the penalty kill, and doing all of these different things. So I think that's worked to his detriment at times. But I do remember, and Joe, you'll remember this too from your time just being in Michigan around the Red Wings. Like when the Predators got him, he was supposed to be a guy that they thought could be a part of the top six for a long time. I mean, he could play down the middle. I mean, the Predators, not only were they used to be searching for a top-line center, they used to be searching for really a second-line center as well.
That was before Johansson.
Yeah. I mean, they, down the middle has been an interesting position for them throughout the history of their franchise. And Yarncroke, a lot of people thought, maybe could be that guy. And it's just kind of worked out differently here with the way the team has gone. But I am interested. I think that's an interesting question. Like, if given a permanent top-six role, could Cali Yarncroke have similar goal production that Craig Smith has had? I don't know.
I mean, his career shooting percentage is 12. Yep. Like you said, he's at 24. He's had a year where he's had a couple of years where he was above 15. So this is high. But I mean, if you applied his career percentage to this, he'd be at like what, 8 or 9 goals? 8 goals probably.
Sure.
If I'm doing the math right now in my head, which you should have serious doubts
about.
Yeah, but I think I'm around there, maybe 7, 8. So it'd still be a good year. I mean, I think he's on pace for more shots this year too.
Yeah.
Than in a normal year. I mean, he's got, if you look at, he's almost two shots on goal a game, which is higher. So I mean, that's probably speaks to just more opportunity as well, out of necessity, I guess, to some extent with this team. But he's taking advantage of it.
He has. And that's, I mean, it's one thing to get the opportunity. You've got to find a way to sustain that and take advantage of those opportunities. And he's done that as of late. So I think it's a credit to him. Now, what does it mean moving forward? Like, if you're the Predators, are you comfortable putting him in a permanent top six role? I think that's going to be interesting to try to figure out as they move forward here as well. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben text in, Cali has his highest trade value now. Talking about the trade value for Cali Yarncroke. Let me just tell you this. The $2 million cap hit that he's got, probably not trading that.
Yeah, I mean, this is why, like, if you're trading also to get rid of money a lot. And like, so for example, I do think that Ryan Ellis is something to look at. If you're going to make a massive move, I would think that would be an obvious place to look. But, yeah, I mean, Yarncroke probably isn't going to be what you just said, and his value is still largely in the contract and in the versatility. So I don't know why. I mean, yeah, I suppose you could say his value is high right now, but I don't know. What would they get for Cali Yarncroke right now?
Not much. Not enough to be worth trading him, especially at that deal. I mean, I don't think there's any way.
I mean, other teams would like the deal.
I'll say this. Before this season, if you would have asked me, hey, is Cali Yarncroke a part of your protected list when it comes to the forward group? Probably not. Like, I would have said Johansson would be a part of it. At that point, I would have probably said Duchesne would be a part of it, Forsberg, Arvidsson. I mean, you could go down the list. Like, I'm not sure Cali Yarncroke would have been a part of it. Right now, like, looking, let's just say they go with the 7-3-1 model. That's the protection model against the expansion draft coming up with Seattle. Like, Cali Yarncroke, he's going to be on that protection list. I mean, I know he was last time, which was met with a lot of reaction to James Neal. And
Kneeler.
Some Predators fans still haven't gotten over that, even though I think it's starting to work out pretty well.
I thought you said you thought they would have won it all with him in 18.
I'm not saying they would have won it all in 18. I'm saying, could he have made the difference in the Winnipeg series? I think he could have.
Well, you're asking it.
Yeah.
Answer it.
I think he could have.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw, so James Neal was pretty good that year.
You are a James Neal truther.
I'm a James Neal truther. He's my guy.
Big deal. No, what is it? Big deal, James Neal?
It's not big deal, James Neal. It's real deal.
James Neal. Yeah,
but I guess you can throw big deal in there, too.
That rhymes, too, yeah. I guess. So
don't expect
maybe
me to.
You could just extend the nickname. It's already real deal, James Neal. Maybe it could be big deal, real deal.
How about
deal.
Big freaking deal, James
big
Neal?
Big freaking deal.
I can't remember stuff.
The real big freaking deal, James Neal.
So,
with
see,
6 points
so
in 17
you,
games.
You buy into that narrative.
I think, look, I think he's exactly the type of player that they were missing in that series. And you look back to 17-18, I mean, he scored 25 goals that year. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. And then was a force in the playoffs, one of the big reasons they got to the cup final as
well. What,
so
when they made the decision, you thought what?
I was surprised.
You thought they were going to protect Neil?
Yeah.
Huh. So I remember being like, oh, yeah, you got to protect the guy who's making nothing.
I thought they'd take another run at. I did.
Well, they did take another run at. They won the President's Trophy.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though. Like, I thought with keeping your big scorers together, they'd take another run at it. I think a lot of people were surprised.
Hmm.
Now, in the long run, that's worked out being good. Because if you were going to protect Neil at that point, I think he had 1 year left on his contract. So you would, if you're going to protect him, you were going to want to sign him to a longer-term deal, which he would have absolutely been open to. I think he loved playing here in Nashville. But since James Neal signed that long-term deal, he had 19 points in 63 games with Calgary, only 7 goals. He had 31 points, 19 goals last year. A lot of those came on the power play with Connor McDavid. And right now this year in Edmonton, 17 games have been played. 3 goals, 3 assists. So it has not worked out since he signed that long-term deal.
Well, but you say it's worked out. Okay, except we're talking about Cale Yarncroke on a team that just had to go on a tear to get itself barely into the playoff picture.
Right, but that,
so it hasn't worked out because you didn't win a cup.
Well, sure, but the long-term trajectory of signing James Neal to a long-term contract, based on what we've seen since he signed his contract, would not – I mean, it would be adding to the list – of contracts that you don't feel good about.
But
right now,
if you're right and they would have beat Winnipeg with him, then it, and they would have won the cup, then who cares?
I agree.
Everything else can just be like the Blackhawks. They got three
cups,
man.
Again, I did not say they would have won the cup. I said it could have been the difference in the Winnipeg series.
But if they beat Winnipeg,
I don't know if anybody was beating Washington that year. But yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Maybe not. Maybe they would have had been just the team to do it.
How cool would that have been to have seen a Nashville Predators Washington Capitals Stanley Cup final with Barry Trotz? Been pretty awesome.
So, the moral of the story is they should have protected James.
Yeah, I guess so. That's the moral.
I changed my mind. You changed my mind.
Thank you.
I wrote so many times the opposite, but now I've changed.
That's what I'm here for.
Big deal, James Neal.
That's right. Big deal, James Neal. We'll continue this discussion when we come back. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. T-Mobile and 102.5 The Game are giving you and 3 friends the chance to win a stay-and-play experience at Hermitage Golf Course. Listen in today at 4:15 for the keyword to text into the game line at 615-737-1025. More details at the GameNashville.com contest page. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll be joined by Predators radio analyst Hal Gill here in about 10 minutes. We'll look ahead to the matchup tonight for the Nashville Predators against the Dallas Stars as well. So looking forward to that conversation coming up with Hal Gill. Joe, speaking of the Predators, let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caleb texts in, says the Preds are playing better hockey now, but Willie says they can't clear the zone more than I've ever heard before. That's got to change if they want any chance at making the playoffs. Also adding in there, Caleb does, that Roman Josi will score tonight.
Okay.
So what do you think of – I don't get the sense right now that they're not able to clear the zone.
That's the other team that's having the trouble. More than much more than they used to, right?
Yes.
That Preds forecheck.
Yeah, we had Dan Hynode on earlier in the show, Predators assistant coach, and talked about the physicality. I thought the way he phrased it was pretty interesting, talking about getting in on the forecheck, how the Predators – are not really the biggest team, and like you don't expect this level of physicality from some of the players, some of the forward groups, especially when compared to the other lineups around the Central Division. But they found a way to get in there, and by their metric, I guess, had 66 hits on Tuesday night against Dallas, which we know every time we play Dallas, that's going to be a physical game, and that rivalry between the Stars and the Predators, I think it brings out a lot of playoff-like intensity just based on what we've seen the last couple of years with these two teams. But I do look at this lineup. I mean, you've got guys like Tolvanen and Arvidsson, even guys like Cunning, who, I mean, they're not that big. You don't expect them to just be throwing their body around. And I thought they did a pretty good job of that. And Is that sustainable long term? I don't know. We'll have to find out what goes on there. But I think when you think of physicality with the Predators, you think of, you know, the Trennans and the Oliviers and the Ekholms of the world. You don't necessarily think of some of their younger players or even some of their skill guys. But, I mean, Tolvanen, 9 hits in the last game. They've had a pretty consistent buy-in in that area from everybody. And that's made a huge difference on their forecheck.
Well, and Sissons isn't huge.
Exactly.
But he's out there
throwing
it around. So.
Haymakers.
Yeah. There's got to be some kind of nickname for the Trent and Olivier combo, right, if they stay together long term?
Yeah, I mean, you've got the herd
line.
The
Mississippi and Moscow connection, you know?
Yeah.
Is there a Moscow, Mississippi? There probably is.
I don't know. We'll have to look it up.
But, you know, those guys have brought, and that's what you expect from that line, but those guys have brought some of that. But like you said, you get those skill guys playing like that, and I think you probably go into a game against Dallas saying they're going to do that. And frankly, Dallas,
they did.
Did it better than the Preds did in the first two periods the other night. I mean, that looked like a Dallas team to me, like, okay, that's the team that surprised everybody last year in the playoffs, but has been a really tough team to score on for a few years now.
There is a Moscow, Mississippi.
Aha!
It's an unincorporated community in Kemper County, Mississippi.
See, those
lying
guys.
Lying along State Highway 493.
Wow. Good, quick work there.
Those Southwest guys should go. Of the city of DeKalb in Mississippi, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
DeKalb?
That's correct.
You sure that's how to say it?
That's how I said it.
Okay.
I don't know. I'd have to look up the official pronunciation. Elevation of Moscow, Mississippi at 509 feet, by the way.
Wow. Got all kinds of facts. Yeah. I should go do a poster there.
How about this breaking news coming from Nicole Auerbach, who we had on earlier in the show?
Why didn't she break it on the show?
And she may not be the first one to have had it. I don't know. She's just the first one I see. Roy Williams retiring from UNC.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
Yeah. That coming from Nicole Auerbach earlier in the show.
That is did you expect that, Elijah?
Not at all. I'm genuinely stunned by that.
How old is Roy Williams?
Pretty darn old, but
he is 70.
What?
70.
Only 70?
Yeah.
You're telling me he's younger than Jim Beheim?
That's what I'm telling you. By 6 years.
Younger than Kay. Kay's, right?
I mean, Kay's like 72, 73, yeah. I think.
That's interesting that he goes out, I mean, you know, kind of with a whimper, frankly, with that program, you know? Maybe it's, but they haven't been able to really, I mean, they've kind of been on the short end of things with Duke here for a few years.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they beat them this year because Duke just had the one awful year, but
a lot of ACC teams beat Duke this year.
Right. Yeah. Trajectory has not been as good, but I figure that he would want to try to make one more run, you know? At North Carolina.
33 years as the head coach at North Carolina.
No.
It says?
33 years.
33 years as coach. Sorry,
yeah,
I read that
wrong.
He was at
Kansas until not that long ago. I guess, well, gosh, I shouldn't say not that long ago. He got the
– I mean, he got beat by Melo.
2003?
Yeah, he got beat by Melo in that championship game. I was like, that wasn't 33 years ago. I'm only 26, so there's no way.
But
yeah.
Still, like, in my mind –
poor reading on my part.
No, but in my mind, though, I'm like, okay, so he's been at Carolina for, what, 7, 8 years? Oh, no, how about 18?
Yeah, he's been there for a long time.
Yeah. You know, this is one of those boy, this job's going to be interesting. Now, you know, Stackhouse, for example, is a guy who had it timed out, and had he got Vanderbilt rolling, would have been someone who, you know, would maybe be mentioned for that job. I wonder if how important is who in the Carolina family is obvious? Anyone right now who's really doing well? Anywhere else in the Carolina
family?
I'd
have to think about that. I don't know.
No one jumps right out. That's wow, man.
Michael Jordan?
Hey, why not?
That's certainly a name.
Yes.
And I'm retweeting Nicole. She didn't credit anybody else, so nice job, Nicole. Nicole breaks huge news, comes on the show. We get to hear from her dog, Red. It's a big day.
It is a big day. Let's go to our text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and says, makes me feel like a scandal is about to pop up with North Carolina.
I don't know about that. I mean, they already like had a totally fake academic program.
They did.
That resulted in no punishment.
Nothing.
So I don't, you know, I don't know how. I wouldn't think so.
How do you view Roy Williams and his legacy? Because I feel like just based on reading between the lines – in your comments. You're not a huge fan of Roy Williams, the coach. Like, you just kind of feel like maybe it's the job more than it is Roy Williams. Like, what do you think about his legacy as a head coach in college basketball?
Okay, in 2007. Okay, so I used to, like, cover the NCAA, but I used to freelance for Yahoo and cover the site I was at while doing my normal job, my day job, cover Michigan State. Michigan State played North Carolina in 2007, a ridiculously loaded North Carolina team with Tyler Hansbrough. They were they were loaded.
Talk about punchable faces. Continue.
Yes. So they and it, this was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, like normal. It's a whole building of North Carolina fans. Michigan State was not good. Their best player was Drew Neitzel, and he was like the 6-foot dude coming off screens shooting threes. And going into the game, going to the UNC locker room, and you always ask about matchups and stuff like this. Every single player in that locker room was like, "Well, we it doesn't matter what they do. We do what we do." You know, in that game, Michigan State, all those sets, they got the best shots you will ever see in a game. It was ridiculous. Neitzel had 27 points, but he was like 9 of 27. He had a terrible shooting day, or they would have beat a team that was so much more talented than them. So I wrote a column for Yahoo that said this team is going to lose to Georgetown. This is not good coaching. You have to at least show film for 5 minutes of your opponent. You can't just say, we're more talented, we'll do what we do, and it's going to work. And I mean, the absolute venom from North Carolina fans reading that comment, this is pre-Twitter, it was. And then they lost.
Comment section, message boards.
And then they lost to Georgetown, like I knew they would, even though they're way better than Georgetown. And I wish I had Twitter at that time. That's one little example, just a personal thing, but I mean, I think Roy Williams, I've come around on, he's a very good, this is a Will Wade thing with Elijah. I think he's a very good developer of talent and a very good individual coach and a very good offensive coach, and his fast break has been copied by people, so he does some things very well. I think that if Roy Williams did not spend his career at Kansas and North Carolina and had to try to work his way up at Purdue and wherever, I don't think he's an elite coach. I don't think he's in the class of a Mike Krzyzewski. I don't.
Chris in Nashville on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says Rick Barnes to North Carolina.
He's from North Carolina.
I'm going to doubt it.
I was looking at the Roy Williams coaching tree, and really the biggest name I saw was Mark Turgeon at Maryland. That's probably the most lucrative name on the list of guys that coached under Roy Williams. I don't know if he's done well enough at Maryland to warrant a UNC.
Is there not a big picture North Carolina family coach? Someone we're not thinking about.
I don't know. We'll have to do some research. Ask Nicole. Maybe she'll come back on the show.
At this point, don't we already have? Yeah. Hey, Nicole, come back on here. Yeah, I mean, here's someone tweeting at us, Adam Smith, Nate Oates, come on down. I mean,
maybe.
If there's not an obvious person to plug in here, he's one of the hot coaches.
He absolutely will be.
You know?
Breaking news in the college basketball world, Roy Williams announcing his retirement from the University of North Carolina. When we come back, we'll get back into the Predators. Preds radio analyst Hal Gill will join us. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning, streaming live on YouTube, on Periscope, and on Twitch as well. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend, Preds radio analyst, Hal Gill, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Belle Meade, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Skillsy, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm just gearing up for another, what seemed like a playoff matchup last game. I assume this is going to be another one, so getting ready for it.
It's going to be awesome. We'll get to the game itself here in just a few minutes, but I do want to get your thoughts on the Smashville Live episode that you and I did last night. Oh. Darcy Hordachuk joining the show.
Epic.
That was potentially the easiest hour of radio that I've ever done in my entire life. We probably could have done 5 hours with the former Nashville Predator.
But yeah, when you start off for a whole hour show and just say, go, you know, that's all you have to do with Darcy. But, yeah, that was awesome. I mean, the stories, you know, he's just a character. And so I never played with him. I've heard all the stories from guys that have, and he didn't disappoint. He gave us a great show. I enjoyed that.
Well, you had some good stories, too, in there. I told this story on the show earlier. It brought me back to college We got a keg one time just for a Probert-Ty Domi fight that we knew was happening between the Wings and Leafs. And, you know, I mean, I know hockey, you know, it's changed for the better, right? But I do kind of miss that stuff. Do you miss that stuff?
You know what? There's a place for it. And it went, you know, he was talking about the glory days with Probert. I mean, those guys were out there, and it was the one goal is to get in a fight and to, you know, that kind of destroyed the fighting, in my opinion. I think there was always a place for fighting, and I still think there is. I think the players need to police themselves, but it got out of hand. You know, when you had, you know, I remember being on teams where there were three fighters on one team and two fighters on the other team, and there's one guy that would be left out, and he'd be upset. You know, he'd be running around, like, looking for someone else to fight. And, you know, it became a sideshow. But, you know, when you're talking about those days, the fight was the game. I mean, that's what people came to see. So, I you know what, I do miss that, but I think it's in a better place. But I'd love to find a happy medium.
Hal, the Predators back in action tonight, taking on the Stars. They've won six in a row. They found themselves back into a playoff spot here for the time being. What's the biggest reason that they've been able to turn this around, in your opinion? As you watch them play, what's been different about them as of late?
I really think the defensive zone structure and the commitment from all five players on the ice to the D side has been the biggest difference. That kind of set them up for a little bit of confidence, I think. And now, you know, you look at that Dallas game, and everyone on that team said, yeah, we kind of got outplayed in the first and second. But then they came back in the third. But I don't look at it as outplayed. I think the Stars had the edge. But in the past, I feel like the Preds would kind of fold up a little bit. There was no quit. I mean, they battled. Sure, Dallas had the edge. But the Preds came back and battled through everything. I mean, they had defensemen tangled up and working together and fighting to get it back around, and it finally did come around. And when you do that and you hang in games and you don't give up those five-minute lapses where you collapse, then more often than not, you're going to find ways to win games. And that's what they're doing right now, is sticking in the fight. And if it's not perfect, well, they'll fight for it until it works out for them. And that's what they're doing right now. That's why they've had success.
Just from a coaching perspective here, Hal, we were kind of talking about coaches in this league and the level of impact they can have. Do you look at this like John Hines and his staff have found something, adjusted something, improved in some way, or is this they've been the same and the players are doing better at adapting to what they want them to do?
Yeah, it's a two-way street, right? I think you kind of pointed at it, you know. You can go out and put a game plan, but players got to go out and execute it, and you need a buy-in. And I really think with Yossi and Ellis being out, I think everyone on the team said, all right, we got to help out defensively. We got to get back. We can't leave Jeremy Davies and Alex Carrier. These young kids are coming in. We can't leave them hanging high and dry. So we're going to have to come back and play five-man defense and get everyone in the picture to make sure that pucks get out, and then make sure pucks get in so these guys can get a change and go out with fresh legs. And that's really became their game now. And that's, you know, whether that's coaching or the buy-in from the players, probably a lot of both, they have that right now. And I've been on teams like that where you say, hey, we have some injuries and we got to fight through it. And it makes you a better team. You know, obviously you want Roman Yossi back in the lineup. You need Ryan Ellis to come back in the lineup. You need these guys. Philip Forsberg's out. That's a tough hit. But you have guys stepping up, and not just one guy or two guys. It's the whole team stepping up. And that's what makes being on a team fun.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by TriStar Moving and by Duncan. Hal, there's been a lot of talk recently about the forecheck and how relentless that has been for the Predators in this winning streak. What have been your thoughts on that? And as a defenseman, when the Predators are executing the way they are right now on the forecheck and are as aggressive as they've been, how difficult is that to handle as a defenseman?
Yeah, that, it makes it miserable. And that's, it goes into the you know, if you're breaking out as a five-man unit and you're going through the neutral zone as a five-man unit, well, more often than not, you're going in the zone as a five-man unit. So, you know, I love that beast line where, you know, you have Trennan barreling down the wing and he chips it in to a guy and the defenseman goes, okay, I have to go back. I have to deal with Trennan, so I'm going to move it pretty quick. I'm not going to sit here and just take a hit. I got to move this puck a little bit quicker than maybe I normally would. And a guy like Colton Sissons, who's just cleaning up and destroying guys everywhere lately, is reading that play and saying, okay, if he's going to move it quick, I'm going to get there quick and hit the other defenseman. So now you have two defensemen going back going, I got to get rid of it. More often than not, it's rim around the boards or it's a bobbled puck, not a clean play, and then you have the next guy jumping in and creating the turnover. And it's really trickled down through the whole team. And that's you know, as a defenseman, I saw Chicago, and they just couldn't move it. They just could not move the puck out of their zone, and it was exhausting for them. And then they turn it over, and now you spend, you know, 30 seconds, 40 seconds in your own end. That's exhausting. So that affects your next shift. And then it goes in waves. And, you know, I feel like the Preds have four lines that are going, and they're jumping over the boards playing relatively the same way, and they're just attacking and eating up teams. Now, the Dallas game, I thought Dallas did a pretty good job moving the puck, but Dallas' forecheck was similar, right? And so that made for playoff-style hockey where the guys were just hunting and getting, and that's why we saw so many hits, is because you're setting up that forecheck, and both teams were doing it pretty well.
Hal, if this team does get to the playoffs after everything, and, I mean, again, we spent weeks on here basically just talking about who's getting traded to where.
Yeah.
And how, what level of blow up are we talking about, and on and on. If this team gets to the playoffs, what does that say? And also, what do you think that means in the context of, you know, the direction of the franchise?
Well, first of all, I know you don't want to, you know, Preds were kind of put in a position with injuries where they got to see some younger players. So, you know, you look at Tolvanen, who's come on and been awesome. You know, I think he's up there with as one of the best rookies right now. You look at Carrier, who's really turned a corner and looks like a solid NHL defenseman. So that might make you change your idea about what this team is about. You know, earlier on, you said, okay, this is our core group and this is what we're building around. Now you have Yakov Trennan playing pretty good hockey. Olivier going out there banging bodies. And everyone's falling in line. And so you say, okay, maybe we're a different team than we thought. And maybe, you know, you squeak into the playoffs. It's going to be a battle. But you're going to learn a lot about the team. And David Poile has to be taking all that into account. He didn't want to have injuries and have these guys come in, I'm sure. But it's been kind of a pleasant surprise to see where this team could go. And once you get into playoffs, guys, you know this. You've seen it before. It's anything goes. Anything can happen. And so I'm sure the guys in the locker room are saying, hey, why not us? Why can't we do it? You know, if Tampa and Florida and Carolina are going to be, you know, they're battling for first position in that division, that's not the same as trying to squeak in. I mean, there's a sense of urgency that you're playing with trying to get into that fourth spot. And that urgency carries over in the playoffs. And sometimes that can catch teams off guard. So, I wouldn't rule them out. If they can get in, they can make some damage.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Belle Meade, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Hal, great stuff as always, my friend. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Hey, I just want to add one thing. You know, as a radio station, I really appreciate you guys. Caroline Fenton coming on. And I think that's awesome that you're bringing in a woman's voice, and I'm excited to hear her. But that's just cruel and unusual to throw her in with Jared. Does she know?
She's about to get a crash course, my friend.
I'm excited to talk to her. So I'm happy to be involved with 102.5 and the game for bringing her on. I think that's awesome.
Well, we appreciate that, Hal, and great stuff as always. And have fun on the call tonight.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the game.
Absolutely. That was Predators radio analyst Hal Gill.
Hazard pay for Caroline?
Maybe so. Maybe she negotiated that into the contract. We'll have to see.
She did say that she on Twitter,
She's got batteries for smoke detectors.
Well, that's a good start.
Yeah.
It's a good start. It could be of immediate assistance to Stillman on that regard. When we come back, we'll have the final segment of the show, get into the NFL hot topics, and also opening day in Major League Baseball. What's your interest level? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join 102.5 The Game on Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. for Smashville Live. Smashville Live airs every Wednesday on 102.5 The Game during the Preds season and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. You can now watch the show online as well via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. To view or listen to past shows, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. We had a great one yesterday with myself, Hal Gill, and Darcy Hordachuk that we talked about in the last segment as well. So go check that out at thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live.
Seemed like a good bleeping time.
Yeah, it was. It was a good time yesterday for sure. And lots of stories with Darcy Hordachuk and Hal Gill. I didn't have to say a whole lot yesterday, which is probably good for all of us that I don't have to talk a whole lot.
Yeah, at one point I was like, man, I haven't heard Robbie's voice
in a long time.
8 minutes in a row.
It's been a long time since I've heard
Robbie's voice. Those are the best, right?
Yeah.
Let them go.
That's right. Absolutely. So go check that out at thegamenashville.com. Joe, today is opening day in Major League Baseball, the first game of 162. I think every team is scheduled to play today. So they're trying to get to as normal as possible. Still with COVID protocols in place as well. More fans will be allowed in stadiums. They're trying to play a 162-game schedule this year in Major League Baseball. What is your interest level in Major League Baseball opening day?
Here's the thing. You're going to see some things on Twitter like the greatest opening day, baseball opening day, right? Now, I will say that if you are at a ballpark on opening day and you got an afternoon game and you got a hot dog and a beer and you're taking part in a pack. I mean,
it's pretty good.
That's pretty hard to beat. So, from that perspective, I agree that baseball opening day is special. And people would argue like which opening day is better. A lot of cases, just based on if you have a favorite sport that's far, like some people say, oh, hockey you easily or NBA, whatever. But it's not close. I mean, football opening day in the NFL and college, you only play 16 games. Oh, I'm sorry, 17.
17. Get it right.
Or you only play 12 games. Some of that has to do, if your college team opens against, you know, Northwestern, Tech, State, Poly.
It's not very exciting.
And is a 53-point favorite, maybe that's not. But it's still the band and the cheerleaders and the tailgate and the pageantry of a football game. So I think just like in a lot of ways, and a lot of it is just the fact that there's so many fewer games, football rules opening days.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jason in Clarksville texts in, I've been waiting for baseball since the NLCS last year. The Braves have a strong rotation, and Freed is going to shut down the Phillies today. Chop on. Jason in Clarksville. Big Braves fans, they're excited about this year.
Well, and that's the thing, too. If you have a team, if your team is good, then it makes it that much sweeter, too.
You fired up about the Tigers this year?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to be great.
I don't even know anybody who's on their crappy team. Miguel Cabrera is still on their crappy team.
Does Miguel Cabrera play for the Tigers? Yeah. It's not going to be a great year in Detroit.
Yeah, so it depends a lot. Now, if I was at, you know, I've been at Tiger Stadium and Comerica Park for opening day. Then you're pumped about opening
day.
Yeah,
sure.
If you can take part in it, heck yeah. Doesn't matter if your team sucks.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon texts in, I'm a casual baseball fan. Usually I watch some of the first week. This year I'm just waiting for the last 20 games for a playoff push. The pandemic has made my priorities change some, and baseball got numb with all the negotiations and the juice balls from a few years ago as well.
So Heidi, so you're talking about like 98? 98 got you mad? Or
I guess.
Going back to the Maguire-Sosa summer? Yeah, last 20. Yeah, that's about – I mean, I think baseball –
there was a conversation a couple years ago from the pitchers that they juiced the balls a bit.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, home runs are getting launched left and right.
That happens every 5 years.
I know.
It? Yeah. You know, I think for me, baseball, obviously you get to – you get through the hockey and NBA playoffs, and you have that dead period. You know, July is, I think, a lot of people say, okay,
watch a little baseball.
Let's pay some more attention to MLB, you know.
Real quickly, I do want to get to this. This is coming from Andrew Groover of the NFL Network. Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst and Titans general manager John Robinson spotted at the Gopher Football Pro Day, so in Minnesota. Maybe Aaron Rodgers will finally get himself a first-round wide receiver, or
Rashad
maybe the Titans may be looking at Rashawn Bateman in the first round.
Rashad Bateman is a good player. I'm sure he would be there at 22. Maybe the Titans, if that's who they want, maybe the Titans can move down some and still get him and still get a corner they like. Todd McShay had his mock up earlier, and he had J.C. Horn going 10th. So my mock draft
moving up the board, man.
My mock draft with the Titans getting J.C. Horn at 22nd, maybe a little bit optimistic.
But hey, if you can make that happen, if you're the Titans, you'll take it right now. I'd sign up for him at 22 right now.
But if your mock drafts aren't at least a little bit fantasy based, really, what fun is it?
Yeah,
right?
Like, what's the point?
Like a bracket. It's got to be a little ambitious for it to be a little fun.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Predators taking on the Stars tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about it all. This has been Robbie and Rex Road. Darren Donica Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.